Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Juan Buritica is here. He is the VP of Engineering at Splice. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Juan.
Hey, Andy. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem at all. It's great to be talking to someone over in the US, a very fond place of mine. I lived there myself for sort of 6-7 years, actually. Yeah, love it. Love the US. Very much looking forward to having this conversation because I think there's a lot to talk about, actually, and or at least a lot that I want to know from a selfish perspective, I suppose. So, I suppose just to get started, would you mind kind of giving the listeners a little bit of a context on your background and experiences and sort of where you're up to now?
Sure. So my background is a little bit all over the place. I've been working in technology for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. But before that, I went to school to study pharmaceutical chemistry in the National University of Columbia. Mm-hmm. And I also did some culinary arts study as well. I moved to the U.S. around 2007 to finish school. And that's when the economy went a little bit awry. So I went to the kitchens where I could make a little bit of money, and little by little the restaurants in Florida shut down. So I found myself making websites for people because I had a computer since I was very little. My parents saved up and got me a computer, and I played around with it for a while. I made MySpace pages for my friends' bands. So that's how I learned CSS and a little bit of HTML. And then that turned into me finding a couple startups down in Florida where I worked at, and then recognizing and understanding there was an industry, which led me to move to New York to try to figure out some luck. And since I've been in New York, I've worked for 5 startups. I started as an engineer, specialized in front-end engineering, primarily. And then little by little, I found myself in leadership roles. At first I ran away from them. I didn't really want to embrace the people part. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why I was in the kitchen and not up front in the front of the house.
Right.
But seeing myself in those roles, having a couple of bosses who I thought were not the best made me consider actually jumping into leadership and management and really understanding and learning about it. And for the past few years, I've been building and leading and scaling engineering organizations. I've been at Splice almost 3 years. I was the 15th employee. I joined a team of, I think we had 3 engineers, 2 QA engineers at the time. And in the first 18 months, we scaled that team up to over 50. And we've done some cool stuff for musicians to help them produce music and help them make some money as well. So that's a brief story.
Awesome. You know, when you, started off, and you like post, I suppose, making websites for people, and you joined a couple of startups down in Miami, what was that sort of experience like? What did you kind of intentionally seek out working for a startup because you kind of felt that it would accelerate your kind of learning curve, or what was the kind of headspace at that time to you know, specifically go and try and work for a startup?
So I didn't have a plan. I started a small web consultancy. I was doing PHP at the time, making Joomla sites. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I was introduced to a founder of a company that was doing free long distance service over for like Latin America. Mm-hmm. It was a service where you could call for free, and then they would play an ad in the middle of the call on both ends. And he just liked my work and offered me a job. And at the time, I had, I think I had just, gotten my work permit and some stuff there. And it had been difficult for me to find an actual job in consulting was hard, like finding clients for websites where there's like, where I was just learning. I didn't really have a portfolio. So it seemed like a good opportunity to learn, with other people too, because I was working a little bit by myself. So that was the primary motivation. I didn't know there was a tech industry. I had never like kept it in focus or actually realized that it could be, something that I could be a part of. I always aspired to academia in like the natural sciences, physics or chemistry. And that's where I saw myself in a lab. So I never really focused on an industry until that came, that opportunity came.
Amazing. Interesting as well. It's so frequent that I have, you know, CTOs, you know, like super senior technical people on this podcast, and all of them sort of seem to just fall into things by accident. I think it's interesting because I think what is propagated in some instances out there in various social networks is that, you know, you have to have this plan, you have to be motivated, you have to kind of do all that. But I would say it's very much weighted, certainly on this podcast, and we've had a lot of successful people on this show, that people have just sort of followed the nose, for lack of a better term, you know, and just kind of allowed things to kind of just materialize and kind of go through the motions. And I think that it's something that people don't speak about enough. It's like, I think the trap with, I think, traditional ways of educating ourselves are that it almost kind of restricts us in some cases. You know, it's like it kind of boxes our ideas up into like, this is the 50 to 100 potential careers out there, and, you know, find one, and, you know, you do your degree, and, you know, you inevitably evolve into doing that for your work. But, you know, like I said, because of the people I've had on the show, it's been really interesting to hear that there's so few of them end up actually having that kind of rigorous process. But yet, I just tend to feel that there's not enough visibility out there of just, yeah, don't kind of worry less about it, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's also probably a situation that has come from like the ages, mm-hmm. right? I think today it's probably, there's a lot more material and a lot more information about the industry and how to get into it and how to... And the roles and the role definition and the career paths, and at least there's a lot more than there was 10 years or 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if you've been in the industry, in the technology industry for a while, you were either located in the Bay Area, right, where there was an established industry, or in other countries and in places where that industry existed, or you had knew someone who was already there who could explain to you what computer programming could be as a career, or that sort of stuff, or video game industry, that those kinds of things. It was harder to discover, so it's probably that's why maybe many of the leaders that you find today who've been there for a while stumbled into it. I would imagine, and I would hope that in 10 years, the people who are leading organizations have had a smoother, or at least more deliberate path into it. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think it's become, it depends, I think, on the technology. It's a good point. I think that you're probably right. The people who are senior now, when they started off, it probably wasn't quite as structured or as linear as potentially it could be now, certainly within like software engineering and things like that. I still think there are other areas within technology, data teams, it still seems like there's not necessarily like a linear path to getting into these things. But
yes, absolutely. But it's still great. It's still great that, especially you see boot camps, you see all these folks who are learning programming skills and who have come from established careers. And they just say, oh, maybe I'm going to try this out. And they make the jump. That's also really cool that people have the opportunity to make those switches.
How different is it, Juan, when, you know, you were kind of building websites, you know, from that stage when you kind of taught yourself how to do some CSS, HTML, you know, and you kind of knew how to code and you felt got to the point where you felt confident that, you know, you could code. You know, how different is it from actually just being able to code to actually working inside a business, you know, within a team environment where, you know, you have to kind of deliver? Just how different is those skills? It almost seems like it's the difference between sort of amateur and professional sports, if you like.
Yeah, so it's very, very different. And I think it's probably one of the biggest challenges that we may have, and I say that a lot, one of the challenges that we have in conversations around software, when we talk about either open source software or personal, let's call this personal software development versus professional software development, is that the purpose and the intent is sometimes very different, and what makes you good or senior in one of those paths doesn't necessarily make you the same in the others. Professional software development makes you a business person, right? Your role, yes, it is to build software, but it isn't to always build software. Mm-hmm. It isn't to always write code. It is to build, at least from my perspective, the role of the software engineer in a company, in a team, is to build, to collaborate and build technological solutions that deliver business value to some extent. The business value may be revenue, it may be more users, it may be innovation. There is a value, and there's a purpose for it. Mm-hmm. So that requires very specific abilities to communicate, to collaborate, to negotiate, to influence. And those have come into focus as very important recently, even more so than your ability to program. Whereas in open source software and personal software, yes, of course, those skills are very important, especially if you're part of a big open source project. You have to learn how to communicate and mindfully. Mm-hmm. But if you start your own project, if you start your own side project that is a library or a automated cat feeder or whatever you want, the collaborative part and the business value are maybe less important. And then it's just your ability to be resourceful, find material, review your code yourself, how disciplined you are. There is a big difference. I still write code, not at work. That's not my job anymore. Mm-hmm. But and I still enjoy it. I think that's what I got into it. I just got a job out of it. But I think the mindset is different. The purpose is different. And I sometimes see I sometimes see some people talk about the job of the programmer as writing code, mm-hmm. or the as a profession, or that engineers are these beautiful snowflakes that require coffee to output all their genius, and it makes it harder for leaders like me or for managers when we're trying to combat a narrative of what the software of what the job of writing software actually is.
Well, I was just going to say, sorry to jump in there, but I was just going to say that I suppose on that point, do you find that it's quite obviously frustrating as like a perception of what a software engineer is, right? But are you finding what you're getting at is that the engineers themselves, or perhaps the junior ones, are almost assuming the position and believing that this is the way that one should act as a software engineer?
Yeah, in some cases, I think it's also expectation mismanagement. If you come into the industry believing that all you will do is write code in that every single obstacle and every meeting will be cleared from your calendar because your code writing ability is precious, you're going to have a rough time. You're going to be disappointed when you actually have to go and negotiate and actually have to go and understand why something is important. And if you want to participate in the process of product development, if you want to be included earlier on in discussions of how a solution works and why maybe using a spreadsheet is better than building an admin, a custom CMS with, I don't know, React, then you need to be open to that collaborative part that requires you to be in rooms with people and not in your computer writing code at 4 a.m, right? It's just a different portions.
Absolutely. You know, you're, you mentioned about obviously now not coding as much. When you started going through, I don't want to call it like a, I don't know, lack of a better term, a transitional period, you know, into where you were assuming more of a leadership role. Something I was curious of is that kind of sense of fulfillment. You know, I think it's quite obvious that, you know, if you enjoy coding, for instance, you know, you get your fulfillment from feeling as though, you know, you've written great code, you know, it's been deployed, you know, it's hopefully a commercial success. You know, well done. That's kind of how you're triggering that sense, that emotion of fulfillment. When you go into a leadership role, you have to try and get it from a different place. And I know this from kind of personal experience that it's not as easy as just like, oh no, now I do this, I should enjoy that, and here's my great sense of fulfillment. It's different for everyone. But how did you feel that transition came about for you? And you know, that kind of need for, you know, now acquiring that sense of fulfillment from, you know, a different place?
Yeah. I think the first realization was that my sort of success or my progress wouldn't be on like every 10 minutes. When the tests ran and passed, or when I could see what can I deploy,
right?
But the progress further as I moved further into senior leadership, executive leadership, my success or failure, it's just the feedback loop is just a lot longer. I think right now I'm just seeing the work I did a year ago. And I get to say, okay, this went well, this did not go well at all. Next time I'm in that position, I have to figure out differently. So I have to find ways to get or like to think about my progress and my sense of progress differently.
Mm-hmm.
It first came from the realization that I was still in software, but I was influencing software through people, right? Mm-hmm. I could have a lot more impact. As a person who is leading a team of engineers, but my impact is through influence and not through direct action. And I think so. Software engineers are levers, right? There, you can have an engineer who would spend 10 hours responding to support tickets or write some functionality that increases our revenue by 2 to 3%, and that could be done at the same time. That is the power of software engineering. Mm-hmm. And I had to try to find a way of seeing myself as a similar lever, where I can deploy the engineering organization towards something that is valuable and that has impact to our users, especially now. So right now it's easy because the impact I have is in the music industry ultimately and indirectly. But we're supporting artists. We're making it easier to make music, and we are creating opportunities. So that's really cool. And it helps me reason through my impact in a much different way, but becoming patient was extremely important. I still sometimes either go do some IT work, like do some cable management, or just write. I have a little bot that I write every now and then. just to see, to have some sense of progress. Right. But it's not. Yeah, it's very.
I can imagine. Yeah, and but nonetheless, kind of a different challenge.
Yeah, it is a very, it is a completely different job, and rewarding in some days. Not all of them. It's dealing with people. On the good days is great. On the bad days, it's not that great.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely different.
Do you buy into the idea that you see more often now in that there's like varied progressive paths? I think it's like probably slightly bigger organizations than probably startups, but they're offering, you know, varied progressive paths for engineers. So if you don't necessarily want to go into the people and the management side, you know, you can still progress, make more money and whatever else equates to progression these days, you know, but stay on the tools, for instance. You certainly see more of that. You know, we've had people on the podcast that are clearly advocates of that. You know, what's your kind of thoughts on that?
I think it's very important to have two paths. Mm-hmm. I don't think everyone should be manager. I think there's managers who are managers who should not be managers. And I think there's engineers who are engineers who should be. Mm-hmm. And having the option is extremely important. I think setting up career paths where the only way to progress is to become responsible for people when the first few years of your career has been the opposite, doesn't necessarily set you up for success, right? And you're effectively either forced to find another job or to become a junior manager when you may have been a senior engineer. Mm. It really isn't a promotion. I like that we're discussing this. This is an industry. It's two very separate tracks. One where you do need to understand and to have been experienced in software development to understand the practice of it. But then you get to understand sort of the human aspect of building software. And it's very important. I also think that the ability to jump back and forth into those career paths is important. I have a principal engineer who used to be a manager at Splice, and he jumped back. I've had a couple of engineers who have encouraged to try management out. Mm-hmm. And I think understanding, so being an engineer who then becomes a manager and gets to understand how to navigate an organization, how to negotiate, how to, like, how decisions are made or what the actual trade-offs are, and then you come back to the IC track, to the individual contributor track, it makes you more powerful. Mm. Because you can be even more impactful with that knowledge. And I think going back as an engineer from a long career of management allows you to understand your role much better. So I think it's the fluidity of those tracks is something I encourage. Mm. In my career levels at Splice, that is expected. People are expected and encouraged to jump back and forth. Of course, as long as there's opportunities and there's spaces and the organization can allow. But it's something that I'm glad we have, and we're not forcing good engineers to become terrible managers.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily, I agree with everything you said. The only thing I would add is that I don't think it's necessarily, you know, unique to the technology industry. I think it's always happened across all industries. It's like, who's your best player? And then all of a sudden they become the manager, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why that's always a natural thing. It's typically, I think it's been a downfall of a lot of businesses is that's the very assumptive thing, and more often than not it's the worst decision to possibly make. I think one thing that's challenging is, I suppose, the stigma attached to what a manager is, because, you know, all of a sudden you could have someone really young who's good enough at their job, but you know, you clearly got tons of managerial and leadership potential. To all of a sudden throw them into a managerial role, there is a stigma attached to that, especially for the people who feel as though, I've been doing this for years and I earned this position. I do think that there is still, that is still lingering. And I think I can't foresee that not being a challenge anytime soon, really. I think it's probably easier for startups that, lay down the groundwork straight away from a cultural perspective. It's clearly they're in a more powerful position to be able to do that. But businesses that have been around for a while that want to adopt some of those kind of ideas, I do see that as a, as still a major challenge from a cultural perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I think for as long as we consider management to be a promotion, and it's part of our language and it's part of our, like, how we see progression, then it's going to be much harder. The other part is if the only way to progress financially is to take on management responsibilities, then that's you're also like forcing that to happen. Mm. And yeah, I agree. It happens in most technical careers. It happens in kitchens, right? Your path as a from line cook to chef is to lead a group of people and not necessarily be an individual contributor. If you want to make money, you have to be the sous chef. You have to be in charge of the kitchen. You have to, and then you just move further away from the actual practice of cooking. Right. Which, yeah, it's not just in South Korea. I agree.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's weird. I think it's a challenge for people because, like, say, it's so ingrained as like this is a natural kind of progression. But yeah, I think it will change. I think in engineering and disciplines like that, it will. I think it's strange though because you even look at an industry like sales, for instance, where or professional sports, they. A lot of the team, because of the commission and obviously in sports because of the salaries, they out earn their quote unquote managers by quite a significant way. But yep. Yet what you still see, and I know this from firsthand, is although that's the case, they still want to be managers because that's the perception of power. So even in industries where it just shouldn't even be a stigma, it's like it should almost be almost the opposite. You still don't see that. So this perception of power and status, I think it's just it's ingrained in people in humans, and it's gonna take a hell of a lot to shake that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree.
Without getting too kind of down a rabbit hole on that one, I suppose. conscious of time as well. Let's hear a little bit more about Splice, because I'm really fascinated by this and what you guys are doing as a business. So tell us a little bit more about how the progressions and what some of the more, I suppose, interesting things that happen at the moment.
So I think Splice is about to be 6 years old in October, if I'm not wrong, November. And I've been here. The funny story is I have a very early connection to Splice because our founders, Matt and Steve, met at a conference I held in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And a few months later, they started working together on random stuff. And one of those projects came out to be Splice. Mm-hmm. And 3 years later, I joined them. So it's fun to have seen the progressions. Splice started as, or at least from the motivation of, build something similar to GitHub, but for musicians. Mm-hmm. The desire to build collaborative tools and bring some of the culture of open source, culture of collaboration to music. That has still proven to be not necessarily hard to build, but hard to scale and tricky to find a way to monetize. Along the way, we found a couple of very interesting businesses. One is our sample library called that we call Sounds today, but it's just a library of samples that music producers, hobbyists, or professionals can use to make music. And we have a plug-in rental service where you can, it's similar to a subscription, but it's a rent-to-own model. Mm-hmm. So you can buy an instrument like Serum, which is a synthesizer, and you can rent it for $799, $899. Whenever your lease is active, you can use it. And if you put your lease on hold, then we don't charge you and we deactivate the plugin. And it's been, we've grown fairly well. And I think Splice right now has found a place in music production that is really cool to see. I think we published a pack by Scorch yesterday, one of the producers from who worked with Dre and 50 Cent. Mm-hmm. And just basically there's a video there where he talks about how cool it would have been to have these toys when he was just starting out, because music production is a difficult job. It's a difficult thing. It's a difficult craft. It's a difficult difficult to get started. Very much like software a couple decades ago, where getting access to components or to libraries or to even, let's think of Stripe, right? Getting an easy way to process payments was nearly impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's very different, right? So if we think of samples as the micro component of music, let's say like functions, and we have those available, and we enable musicians to discover them, and basically just take other people's work to compose and to build upon. It's great. So what's happening at Splice? We're scaling our marketplace little by little. We're trying to add new things to our marketplace, new musical components where we continue to make it easier to make music, and expanding on the workflow of music production as well.
Amazing, mate. It's really cool. I'm a big fan of it. When like Jordan told me about it, I was super keen to learn more about it, and I can only see it go one direction here, and for obviously the progress that you've made, along with that comes a lot of hiring, and I'm sure that it's something that's constantly happening at the moment as well.
We've reached a stable plateau, at least for a moment. The first couple years at Splice were like that, right? We went from a company was 15 to over, I think, 140. And engineering exploded in growth, right? We grew 10 times in the first 18 months. And so that was a lot of hiring and a lot of building. More recently, we've chilled out a little. We're focusing on growing our business and making it sustainable, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course. One thing we always do, though, I'm sure you're still always looking for great engineers. So in case anyone's obviously interested in checking Splice out in general, if you've not heard about it yet, or you're interested in joining, where's the best place to go and check out what's available?
So jobs.splice.com is usually where we publish things. When we don't have any openings, people can also always send me a note at juan@splice.com. So juan@splice.com. And I'm always willing to talk to folks and keep people in mind for new opportunities.
Juan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time and putting up with me. Appreciate it.
Andy, this has been great. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.